one of the consequences of what you did, and I don't know exactly which provision, but one of the consequences of what you did was to shift the program fairly dramatically from a functioning pay-as-you-go program into a partial pre-funding program. And we began right after the 83 amendments to see this dramatic increase in the trust fund reserves. So much so that we finally get Senator Moynihan changing course and wanting to argue to go back to pay-as-you-go. So that was a big impact from the 83 Commission. Was that a conscious design decision that you all made at that time, that you wanted to move to partial pre-funding, or did it just somehow happen as an unintended consequence of these other changes that you made?
I'd say more the unintended consequences. Bob Myers would say completely.
That's what he said to me when I asked him the same question.
Yeah, he would say completely and didn't pay attention.
He said nobody, he said they never discussed that, is what he told me.
Well, he's close to the truth.
Okay.
But I certainly wouldn't argue that I wasn't aware of the fact that this would create sizable surpluses. He must have been aware that it would create sizable surplus. He's correct in saying we hadn't focused on that as an issue.
Okay.
But the knowledge that it would happen was there.
Right.
And he did estimates that showed it would happen. That made it possible for Moynihan to write later as if he had discovered a consequence that they hadn't realized at the time, which wasn't quite true. But close enough to the truth so that he wrote as if, gosh, we did better than we thought, even produced this, which would then reduce the deficit held by the public, and that was
all
a solution of all other kinds of things.
Right.
Bob Myers wants it to seem as if nobody had ever decided to go away from pay-as-you-go, that it was just a little bit of an accident off the... The truth is a little muddied in between there.
But you never had a philosophical discussion saying we want to shift the financing basis of the program away from pay-as-you-go.
No.
That never happened, clearly.
And on the other hand, it wasn't so clearly pay-as-you-go before.
Right.
See, that's
it's always a little ambiguous.
That was always... In fact, it was a little dishonest the way the deficit was treated in the past. The contribution rates were always set as if it were a partly funded system. Set, that is, for the long run. All the increasing contribution rates, if they'd gone into effect, would have produced a sizable fund, which would have been a departure from pay-as-you-go. And it was possible to bring the system into balance only because it built a large fund in those future. But yet, whenever it came to putting the rates into effect, the system was treated as if it were pay-as-you-go.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was being operated pay-as-you-go was never recognized in the contribution schedules that Bob endorsed as making the system soundly financed for the whole 75 years. If he'd been completely honest and had thought that the system was really pay-as-you-go, he should have insisted on a schedule of tax increases in the future that was much larger than we ever put in.
Right.
He could only say it was financed adequately by assuming those rates would go into effect on the dates they were set.
Right.
That would build a big fund. It would mean the system was not pay-as-you-go at all.
And it would have a substantial portion of its income from interest earnings.
Yeah, and it was always partially. So when we say it shifted from pay-as-you-go to partially funded, that's true only if you're concentrating on what actually became effective law, not on what was in the law. Only if you only counted what rates actually went into effect.
A more rigorous way to say it would be to say that the reserve grew in size dramatically after the 83 amendments. That's an accurate way to say it. Is it not?
Well, that's certainly true, yeah. It's, I suppose another way to look at it is that, well, I guess we took partial reserve financing really seriously from then on. It had always been written into the law, but never put into effect, actually. But that puts the, that makes the, makes the estimates somewhat deceptive in the previous years. They were, the estimates were always as if it was going to be a big reserve, but in fact, it was always pay-as-you-go.
Right, we never let
it materialize. So if Bob Myers thought it was pay-as-you-go, why didn't he put rates in the law that were pay-as-you-go rates? Because the law itself didn't have pay-as-you-go rates in it. That's the, but he was always carrying in his mind that it was really a pay-as-you-go system. Mm. But that isn't what it was in the trustees' report.
That wasn't the sort of philosophical intent.
They were never a pay-as-you-go system if you looked at the trustees' report in terms of the what happened as a way of reaching balance over 75 years. That was always possible only because the rates in the law produced big surpluses. And interest earnings on those surpluses.
Right. And that only materialized after the 83 amendments, in fact.
Yeah.
And then a lot of things happened as a result of that. A lot of political dynamics came into play about whether the trust funds were camouflaging the deficit and whether the trust funds were real assets, and
yeah,
all sorts of philosophical and political controversy,
right,
was generated by the fact that, that we really did grow,
yeah,
a sizable trust fund for the first time.
Yeah, and I think it's the first time, its existence, I think, now makes it possible for people to see that Social Security really is a savings operation.